Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin.
This is a unit facility. Your rights and system have been withdrawn. You'll be held here indefinitely. We are not required to provide you with legal representation. Anything you say will be recorded. You will be allowed no communication with any person or organization outside this facility. There is no right of appeal. If you fail to comply with the rules, we are authorized to discipline you.
One, two, three, four. You say one, two, twice, then the microphone doesn't get a chance to restart properly, I think, or something.
Whatever.
I forget. There's something funny about that right now.
Greetings, this is Wes.
And this is the world-famous Mark Bernay.
And we are here at Pizza Antica in Lafayette.
Which is next door to SWOD.
That's correct. Broadcasting to you in our weekly podcast, which hasn't been so weekly, but we'll get back to that.
Is it bee season again? Because this is the area where sit outside. We sit outside for noise reasons,
right?
So we won't have the crowd inside the restaurant making noise. But right in these two restaurants, bees and wasps can still fly around and eat your food and bother you with stuff.
And we're getting close to that because we're getting nearer to the summer. Which, by the way, we experienced the bees firsthand. Up close over at Bo's Barbecue down the street. So,
oh, did we there?
That's where we usually end up running into them.
Okay.
Well, we've got stories and articles and things to talk about today on the WNO show.
First of all, I have a question for you though. We noticed on Bart.
Anyway,
oh, that's right. Yeah, anything we talk about, go to slurpcast.com. You'll find a blog entry behind each podcast with the URLs that we discuss and maybe notes and
you don't need the triple W's. Like just right. slurpcast.com. In fact, you probably don't even need the .com. You just say slurpcast and hit
it. Depends on the browser. No, it depends on the browser.
Well, okay.
No.
Oh, it is?
Like an IE, it'll go out in your network because the word, a single word.
.com took priority over everything else.
No, because a single word is legal.
Okay.
It's perfectly legal to have a single word URL because the DNS entry for that might exist within your own local network. And the IE will not look beyond that. It'll just try to find it on your local network. So you have to at least hold control key down, hit enter, to that'll cause www to go in front and .com to go behind or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Seems to work here in the Chrome browser.
Yeah, then some browsers. Yeah, Google some browsers to, will. Yeah, some browsers will automatically add those to a single word, but not all.
Okay.
Even the iPhone doesn't. The iPhone, I think, will try the single word first, and then you'll see it add the other ones later.
Huh. Exactly. All right.
Yeah.
So
anyway, so on BART,
there
were these people. Most people, of course, as you would expect, were just reading the news on their phone or playing games on their phone or, you know, something normal that normal people would do.
Uh-huh.
But some people had this thing that appeared to be made out of a bunch of, you said it was called paper? They had like a stack of maybe 100 or 200 sheets of this thing that Wes was calling paper.
Uh-huh.
And it has some technology, instead of electronic ink, like on your Kindle or whatever, some kind of, you said it was a chemical ink?
What? A chemical ink?
Yeah. And it's some kind of, it's some kind of a display.
Like while you're watching it, it changes and stuff like that?
Yeah. No, it
doesn't.
It seems like it just stays there.
What?
But as an alternative, you get a whole bunch of these pieces and you just kind of use your finger, you make this motion with your finger.
Really?
And the piece of paper has this very three-dimensional effect where it seems to go to the next, you said it was page, and you see a different set of chemical ink on the next page and stuff.
That's really impressive. That sounds like a Kindle, like way up on steroids or something.
Exactly. What I want to know is how do you install apps? And you had some idea for how would you install apps on a thing like that?
I came to the conclusion that the way that you use that is use another material that's manufactured by a company called 3M. And they actually have this material. You take a piece of this material and stick one half of that piece onto the portion of this new material we're talking about, this paper.
Right.
You stick one half of that
Is
material on the paper.
That paper
and then whatever you wish to add to that, you stick the other portion of that right. material from 3M on yep. top of the new material so that right. you're actually literally
so
merging the two.
But then after the application gets installed, you can remove it? Or do you have to leave it?
Well, it depends on the choice of material that you use right. from this company, 3M. You okay. can actually use, I think okay. there's a couple of other companies that manufacture the same thing for installing mm-hmm. new applications mm-hmm. onto your paper.
Mm-hmm. Now, I heard a rumor. Is okay. this really true?
All right.
That paper is made from trees?
No. No, that's not
I heard,
true.
That's what I heard.
No, no.
Really,
no.
seriously. That's
really?
What I heard that. Yeah.
From trees?
That they take trees and they grind them up in tiny little pieces and somehow that's where this huh. paper comes
I
from.
I knew that it was some sort of biomaterial.
right.
But I thought
right.
it was sort of chemically created and altered yeah. in such a way that it was very yeah. scientifically yeah. interesting and entertaining and...
Yeah, I would think. But anyway, yeah, it's all very, this whole new world,
strange.
This whole new world,
this,
you know.
Technology is just amazing.
Yeah, split green side.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, okay, thank you.
So we'll start out a little bit. I want to read...
Maybe we should have asked him, because he's younger. He'd probably be into all this modern stuff. He might yeah. actually know.
Huh. He might.
Hey, sir, is it true that thing you kids use of today called paper...
Kids.
...is made from trees?
Nice.
Shall we ask?
On this note, I'm going to start out with the Computer History Daily quote.
Okay.
IBM introduces the magnetic tape, Selectric... That was cool. That was awesome. That was awesome. Would you like... Well, that was your
not
knife.
Yet. Yeah, I don't need it yet.
So let me start off here and continue where we left off.
Okay.
IBM introduces the magnetic tape / Selectric typewriter in 1964. The MT / ST combines the features of the Selectric typewriter with a magnetic tape drive. For the first time, typed material can be edited without having to retype the whole text.
For the first time? I wonder if that's really for the first time, because IBM was not the primary company into word processors in the early days.
Okay.
So, but I don't know the history of who was really... I know that Wang was very big.
Right. Yeah.
Stuff like that, but, yeah.
So, on the tape, information can be stored, replayed, corrected, and reprinted as many times as needed, and then erased and reused for other projects.
Hmm. Well, you know what? That's certainly not the first one, because all that was done with paper tape before. That was certainly all done with punch paper tape.
This is 1964.
Okay. Long before 1964, okay. they had punch paper tape systems that you could make corrections with. Hmm. There's this thing called a FlexiWriter. I played with FlexiWriters in my father's office, actually, mm-hmm. in long before 64, hmm. that you would store, the secretary would type a document, and then he could make corrections by playing the tape partway through. He had two tapes. He would read one, write another one.
Okay.
So he'd read one paper tape until you get to a point you want to make a change. Uh-huh. Then make some changes. And, you know, so the old tape would be copied to the new tape until you got to the point where you wanted to make changes. And the new tape would have your changes and stuff.
Hmm.
They did database stuff on that. They did a lot of things with that. And the most fascinating thing to me is that I kind of opened one up and saw how they worked.
Mm-hmm.
But FlexiWriter wasn't all electric. It was like player piano technology where it had the pneumatic stuff to the keys or the typewriter keys
yeah.
were triggered by pneumatics like player piano
okay.
type air
so
pressure
air
stuff.
Driven?
Yeah, rather than electromagnets or anything.
Hmm.
No. Anyway, that was before this IBM one. Yeah, and whether IBM was the first with that magnetic tape, I don't know.
We'll have to put up a link to share yeah. to see all the different types of these systems.
Yeah, I haven't thought of FlexiWriters for years, but I'm sure there's all kinds of websites about them.
That'd be cool. I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
That's not. I know about the Selectrics, but I don't know.
Oh, long before Selectrics.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Huh.
When you said magnetic tape, I thought I was thinking. So first you were talking about mainframe. No, tape drives on mainframe computers and stuff like that.
Huh. Cool.
Yeah.
So, most people know that this show is compressed into a format called MP3, which is a lossy compression, but it's one of the better encoders that actually like takes the audio file that we produce
mm-hmm.
and removes parts of the audio file that our ears don't care about.
Right.
And that format was created by the Fraunhofer group.
Okay.
And has become...
No, NP1s remove the part the cats don't care about.
Right.
NP2s remove the part dogs don't care about.
Yeah.
And finally got the NP3, which was meant for what humans don't care about.
Right. And it took a long time for them to do that because they didn't really want to get to the human part.
Right.
It was easier to do the cats and dogs because they don't really have any kind of like... They don't shake their head when, you know...
Right.
Anyway, so... So there's a new format that's being introduced, which variants of this idea have already been tried. MP3 Pro was one format that was introduced where they had very, very low compression ratios or very high compression ratios, but would do things with the EQ to play it back to make during the playback to make it sound really, really nice.
Okay.
The problem is that your player had to recognize this MP3 file as an MP3 Pro file.
Sure.
But in that sense, it could also maintain some backwards compatibility, whereas if it didn't recognize it as an MP3 profile, it would still play it back, but at a very reduced quality.
Okay.
So it wasn't all that practical, it wasn't all that good, because the MP3 Pro was the idea was interesting. Well, the Thompson Group is introducing a new format called, what are they doing? MP3 HD format, which, like Ogg Vorbis, is a lossless format.
Okay.
That's what they're claiming. However, what this article talks about is the fact that if your device does not recognize the MP3 HD format, it will pick out and play the MP3 only portion of that file. So it's a way of including both formats, both a lossless and a lossy version of your file in the same format. In the same
smaller
file.
Than WAV files and stuff?
It's supposed to be smaller than WAV files, but I don't understand how you get a lossless compression without reducing the file size. I mean, you know, when you reduce the file size, you're obviously throwing something out. So
unless it finds redundant information beyond the scale it's digitizing at or something.
Okay.
Like there's a as just a stupid example, not for the real world, but if you recorded a 10 seconds absolutely perfect sine wave within the range of its digitization, it could replace that 10 seconds with a couple of bytes saying the following is a sine wave that follows this mathematical formula.
Okay.
You know, so that's why I say some things could be lossless.
Interesting.
Happen, but that's very rare, obviously.
We'll have to see, because I'm skeptical that that's really going to do as well as something like a lame encoder.
Yeah. But MP4 is video, right?
Right.
Is there an MP5 or an MP6? Hey, why do they go to MP3 something? Why don't they just keep advancing the numbers? Whatever 1 and 2 are, I have no idea, but they probably existed.
Yeah, if the scheme is similar, but then
was
it remains really the same format.
Was there really a 1 and a 2?
Yes.
Okay. And what's the story with them? They just were first attempts and then weren't
I forget. MP2 was something like a format that's recognized by the film industry for audio or something like that.
Okay.
And then I actually don't remember what MP1 is.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you have any interesting stories?
Yeah, about that. I found an article about that paper thing. Was made for trees or not? I don't know. But there.
Oh boy.
As an example of how this might be useful, because it's going to sound like it's a strange article, suppose you wanted to cheat. You wanted to know who people voted for. So someone takes a paper ballot, and they go in the booth, and they mark it up, and they drop it in the box, and someone else takes a paper ballot and marks it up in the private booth and drops it in the box.
Uh-huh.
But you later on want to figure out who they voted for.
Go over there and knock that woman's head into the wall.
Was she the one that... Oh,
it's really loud.
I thought you meant the heater, because the heater's still making noises. But,
okay, go ahead.
Anyway, so one way you could do this is you pre-scan... You pre-mark the ballots in some way in advance.
Okay.
As an example, if the public would tolerate serial numbers on them, for example, you could secretly write down what serial number you're giving to different people and then figure out who they voted for later or whatever. But people would probably notice that and figure, well, there's something wrong with that.
It's called a social security number.
No, but it's not on the ballot. The ballot, as you mark it privately and drop in the box, doesn't have anything like that on it.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, so this group has figured out how to fingerprint ordinary pieces of paper very cheaply without having to write anything on them or do anything to them in advance.
Okay.
You can just take a pack of blank paper and very cheaply do something where you can recognize each sheet in that pack later, even after someone wrote on it, or even if they filled in a ballot on it. Doesn't really matter. And they're doing it just because this paper is, I think it's really true that it's made from trees, and it has all these microfibers that are just kind of line up randomly in, okay, in the process.
Okay.
So if you take a microscope and analyze a piece of paper, you can certainly see a unique patterns to the way the fibers are lining up.
All right.
So what these people have figured out, that if you just take an ordinary scanner, ordinary cheap scanner, and scan one sheet of paper at a very high contrast in some small area of it, then turn it 90 degrees and scan it again just with an ordinary scanner, you can get a sufficient unique fingerprint of that sheet of paper that you can recognize it later. So you can do sneaky little things with it and stuff.
So that's kind of interesting. So that wouldn't change then. What you're saying is from the time that somebody takes that paper,
that's what they're
going to do with it.
Yeah, as long as they don't write exactly on top of the spot you
scan. So it's like a fingerprint. It's like basically a unique signature in the grains of this paper.
But that you can do without needing a fancy microscope. You can do it just with a regular everyday scanner.
Okay.
So
it's just
theoretically interesting, and you could do some mischief with it or something.
Okay. And is that
so? There's an article that shows pictures of what the scanner sees. I think this is done with a microscope, and then there's another one just done with. These are done with scanners. This looks totally different, but you can they can kind of figure out what the paper was and stuff.
Okay. No, that's cool. Yeah. I can see that. That's interesting. It's kind of like a watermark.
Right.
Where it's not visible to the human eye, but it is if you get down low enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just interesting to trace where something came from.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So what is that? Oh, that's not your one. You had this bizarre thing you were playing with today.
Yeah.
That was not an iPhone or an iTouch. Yeah, what was that?
So I've been on this extremely interesting, entertaining, and frustrating mission.
Right.
My cell phone carrier is Metro PCS.
Right.
About 2 weeks ago, I decided that I wanted to upgrade my phone because I've been getting so many text messages that I felt that it was appropriate to get the top-of-the-line QWERTY keyboard version.
Right.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, I got the phone. It was a Samsung. Mm-hmm. I forget what the name of the model was, but it was their QWERTY keyboard. And I had gone from a Razer down to this QWERTY, Samsung, and it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible.
But it had a keyboard,
The only thing good about this was the flip-out keyboard.
Right.
Everything else was horrible. Uh-huh. The fact that it wouldn't transfer audio files back and forth between a PC unless you bought an SD card.
Yeah.
Even though it had five megs.
SD cards are really expensive, aren't they?
But it had 5 megs built in.
And SD cards are really expensive, aren't they, Wes?
Yes, they are.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
But 5 megs of built-in memory to take pictures or something like that. It was maybe more than that.
We wouldn't do it.
But it wouldn't take a file. It wouldn't take an audio file unless you buy an SD card. Whatever.
And how much would an SD card have been? Because we need to discuss prices, and as the story progresses, I need to throw in interesting facts about prices.
Okay.
So anyway, continue on.
Probably $10 for a decent size SD card.
Right.
Micro SD. Anyway.
And that was the only thing you're unhappy about.
No, I haven't stopped yet. No.
Yeah.
The effort that it takes to start to send a text message to somebody is literally 4 key presses before you actually start to type.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Four.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you can start typing, texting.
The name of the person first or something?
Well, no. Yep. That's just to get... Yeah, no, that's...
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. Okay, that's literally... I'm assuming that you're pretty much like...
Yeah.
I'm not even talking about spelling out the name. I'm literally
to get to the place where you can begin
to start typing
the
message.
Yeah.
About 4.
Yeah, okay. I can understand your dilemma.
Oh, you're playing a game with me now, Mark.
4.
Okay,
yeah.
So...
How fast can you type?
No.
How many words
can you type? So that's one thing. The other thing is...
So that's the tenth of
the second? Unlike the Razer, the USB cable for both power and transferring files, which I could not do, was...
You spent $10
was proprietary. Mm-hmm. So it was not a standard small USB port.
Right. And how much did it cost? Did the proprietary cable come with the phone free?
Yes.
So you actually had one?
Yes. I had one and a power supply.
Yes, okay.
But I usually need 2 of those.
And how much would it cost to buy a second one?
Probably $40.
On eBay?
No, at
on
the
eBay.
Store.
But on eBay,
I didn't check for the Samsung. I didn't look on
probably
first.
$5 on eBay, okay. So we're up to $15 so far. $15 in about 1/10 of a second so far. Yeah, continue.
Wow. Okay, but you have to understand that I'm coming from a phone that does all of those things much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Minus, the only thing minus is this flip-out keyboard.
Right.
It's all standard USB, which means I can just use any of the keys.
The Razer you're talking about?
Yes.
Or
any of the cables that I have currently lying around the house, I can use with the Razer.
Okay.
Without doing anything extra, I can transfer video, files, audio as well, which I could not do with a Samsung.
Unless you spend $10.
Maybe. Anyway. The other thing is, the other thing is that the software to download, which you need absolutely with the Samsung, is something that's hidden. You have to actually search around Samsung's site for the PC utils or PC.
But you already found it. But you already
I
found
spent
it.
I spent a lot of time finding it, and I, after about an hour of searching, I found it, downloaded it, and installed it.
Right. So at the time that you became unhappy with this phone, you already had it. You were already taking care of that. You already had it. And you could have solved all your other problems for $15.
No.
And a quarter of a second.
I had to download the software.
Keep going.
I had to download the software and install it to realize that it would not work unless I had the SD card.
For $10.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Well, for whatever money that I want to buy the SD card.
Okay,
well,
continue. Yeah, okay. Keep going.
What else? Camera was okay. It was pretty, it wasn't all that great. It would save pictures, which frustrated me. But that pretty much was it. Oh, the fact that it was all plastic and had no, metal case, made me think that it was going to be a lot more, able to break.
But it didn't actually break, though.
No, it didn't.
It was lighter, because it was plastic, it was lighter, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I kind of think that there's something to having something that's got weight. You know you're carrying it.
Right.
I just want something that's a little bit more, resistant to damage.
So you couldn't glue a fishing weight to it or something? For 50 cents. We could have 50 cents here to glue a fishing weight to it to take away something. Okay.
So those things all, pretty much, I'm sure there's other things that I've forgotten to talk about.
Okay.
That I forgot to talk about, but they were all fairly frustrating, and I decided after using it over and over again that I wanted to return it.
Right. Okay.
And last podcast that we did, you had mentioned that, fact, one of the things you were reading, that my service provider was now selling a BlackBerry.
Right.
And that's not an iPhone, but it still has been around for a very long time.
Yeah, there you go, Wes. It's not an iPhone. Okay, but keep on.
Hold on.
You
know. not looking to replace my Touch, just looking to have something that I can text with and is reliable and maybe do some other things, like stay on some of the instant messaging services that I use.
Okay.
So I went and I picked one up.
Mm-hmm. And how much was it?
It was a lot of money.
How much?
Are you sure?
Yes.
You ready?
Yes.
So with a $50 discount that I had, it came out to be about $400.
And that's because Metro PCS has no contract, so they don't subsidize the phone.
That's correct.
You just have to pay the full retail price for the phone. Okay.
The plan that I have, though, Metro PCS...
But you could have kept your other phone and added $15 in a quarter of a second. Right. Okay.
But that wouldn't have solved the power cable problem and the...
Yes,
and
it would, because that's the $5. $10 for the SD card, $5 for an eBay alternative cable. And the BlackBerry, how many keystrokes does it take on the BlackBerry?
Let's say I go over to your house, though, and you want to share with me something that you have on your machine that I don't have.
Oh, yeah.
What do I have to do? Well, I certainly can't ask you for a standard USB cable.
Right.
No,
okay.
I have to
I could email it to you or something.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Now, for the BlackBerry, how many keystrokes does it take on the BlackBerry to start an SMS? Including a thumb wheel,
Two.
Two.
One to start typing the name. And then the down key to choose SMS, a text message.
No, but if you're in the middle of something else, how do you start typing the name with only one keystroke? Don't you have to roll the roller around the screen for 5 hours?
No, if I start using the BlackBerry right now, if I want to send a text message, all I start doing is...
Watch this carefully. Yeah, you're going to cheat.
No,
and do something else.
I do have to, it's locked, so I have to unlock it. So I'm logging in.
Logging in.
So right here, I'm at the home screen.
Right.
If I start typing Mark Bernay,
it will assume that that's a name right from the beginning.
So I get the right person.
Yeah.
But then I can say, Oops. Okay, I did that wrong. No.
Okay. Okay. So.
So I made a mistake, but.
Okay.
So if I type in your name.
Then you can scroll the wheel.
Then I can hit the app button.
Mm-hmm.
either scroll down or or arrow down, and I've got the SMS text messaging right there.
Okay.
That was two buttons.
Yeah, plus scrolling.
Plus three to say go.
Yeah, okay.
And now I can send a
message.
That's
better than four. Yeah, you're right. For $400, it's worth it to save one T-shirt. Yeah,
yeah. But it was all right there, as opposed to having to navigate around on the Samsung to actually get to the point where I can send text message.
Okay.
So no, the OS is really bad.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Okay. So three versus four.
Right. Okay. But. I know the BlackBerry, you can add applications and stuff like that.
Right.
But.
Right.
Does the BlackBerry have 25,000 applications?
No.
Because the App Store, App Store is up to 25,000 for iPhone now.
But BlackBerry has been around for a long time.
There's some, some.
And they have a lot of different apps.
I'm going to read you a description of an iPhone app.
Mark, are we competing here? Let's get this out in the open.
Yes. Number 8 Calabrese.
Yep.
For you.
Okay. Thank you.
Number 8 Calabrese.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, enjoy.
Okay. Suppose we were competing.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we are.
I guess we are.
Okay. suppose you want to communicate with a friend.
Yeah.
Secretly. With the iPhone, you and your friend can both start the BuzzBuka application.
What?
The BuzzBuka.
Okay.
Okay. And you connect it to your friend. You both start the same application. You tell it that that's the person you want to talk to.
Okay.
Your friend can keep the phone in his pocket, or her pocket.
Yes.
And all you have to do is press the volume key repeatedly to make Morse code patterns. Every time you press the volume key, it'll send a buzz, a vibration to your friend, who can feel the vibrations in their pocket of the Morse code, and you can secretly, therefore, communicate with them.
Being the horny guy that I am, that could become a remote sex tool.
See, so can your BlackBerry do that?
Probably. It certainly has the ability to do that. I mean, it has a vibrator in it.
But,
wow, that's creative.
Have BuzzBuka.
No, it doesn't. BuzzBuka. That's awesome.
Okay. And then you know my favorite. Like, how many fart apps are there for the BlackBerry? Do you think there's even one?
There might not even be one. That is possible. There might not even be one fart app for the BlackBerry.
Yeah, because there's a great one this week. There's Bikini Fart. It's a fart app, and it has pictures of women in bikinis, both in the same thing. Now, can the BlackBerry do that?
Wait. What's the point of this again?
It has, coming soon, 100 more fart sounds and new ladies. It has pictures of ladies in bikinis, and they
what's
fart.
What's the interest? Why is it pictures of ladies in bikinis and farts? I'm sorry, I'm missing out here.
You're just jealous. You're saying all this because you're jealous.
No,
your phone can't do it.
No, I want to know.
Your phone can't do it, so you're just being jealous and making all these excuses. You know, personally, why you'd want to have bikini farts?
Are they two things that men like get happy with?
I'm sure.
Women in bikinis and farts.
Yeah, so you know, if you weren't trying to deny that your phone can't do it, you know, you'd know.
Oh,
and then. And then, can your BlackBerry run Ganiometer?
Wow.
An accelerator-based knee Ganiometer. The application measures tibial inclination and then calculates the knee flexion angle using a trigonometric equation.
Yeah.
It eliminates the difficulties of palpating bony landmarks in the femoral segment, which result from cross-section anatomy.
Palpony bone marks.
And it makes key assumptions of morphologically typical adult patients, horizontal supine posture, and predictable ratio of length to femur tibia. Now, can your BlackBerry do that?
I can't even figure out what it is that you're asking me.
Again, you're just jealous. You're just jealous. I can't do it. Okay.
I got nothing.
You're just jealous. I can't do it.
I got zero.
Okay.
I'm sitting here. I got nothing.
Here's another one.
This all pops and buzzes on this side of the table over here.
Here's another one.
All right. Go ahead.
On South Park once, they had a secret infrasound frequency.
Mm-hmm.
That causes all humans in the entire world to lose control of their bowels and start rolling logs due to resonance.
What? And due to resonance?
Yes. And there's an iPhone app now that will make that sound. Can your phone do that? Well,
yeah. Well, the answer is yes. If you give me the sound, I can
okay
put it in my BlackBerry and play it very loudly.
Okay, and
but what good would that
can,
be?
I
don't want to be riding a bird.
I'm going to read you a description
with
of another
bunch of
one.
People who have unloaded their whatever it is in their whatever, whatever.
Jealousy. Jealousy. So, okay. Can your BlackBerry play Dangerous Finger?
I'm already scared. What? Dangerous Finger.
It's a very simple and thrilling game. You have the tool that a point becomes... I'm reading this exactly.
Okay.
You have the tool that a point becomes
this.
Sharp in its right hand and thrusts the space of the finger of your left hand
in its right
at the tip of the tool one after another.
Okay.
When you thrust your left hand by mistake, quote, it hurts.
Right, right, right.
But you may be relieved. You don't need to have a tool in your right hand with this game.
Okay.
Your finger is a tool. You tap the area between the fingers of the left hand in the insequential order.
Yes.
And tap it as early as possible.
Uh-huh.
The time measured is recorded if you succeed in the play and exceeds the fastest time. A play is finished when you mistake the turn of the tap, the area of the tap. The left hand of this game is three modes of the boy, of the girl, and of the alien.
Okay.
You should be careful because the girl because the girl and the alien have a habit. You imitate a game, and
crack.
It is very dangerous to do it by your actual hand. You enjoy it only with a game.
Wow.
Here's the best
part. I got a question.
In the boy mode, you play with a boy's hand.
Yeah.
In the girl mode, you play by girl's hand, the left hand sometimes closes.
Okay.
In the alien mode, you play by the alien hand, the left hand sometimes disappears. Can your BlackBerry do anything of this, even remotely?
I don't think so.
Okay, so you see, you paid $400 for that,
so
right?
In there, who's the tool? Is it the user? Is it the application, or is it the program?
Well, in the real world, it would be a knife that you're playing with or something.
I think the real tool is the person that wrote that description.
Well, they don't speak English natively. It's not their fault. You know?
Okay. No, actually, the screenshot that you have there looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
Looked pretty awesome. So.
No. But anyway, so again, we have all these things that your phone can't do.
That's true.
And you paid $400 for it. Okay.
Right.
I rest my case.
And
that's
I'm going to be able to use this for $50 a month, unlimited, to do anything anywhere.
Right.
Browse the web.
At what
do
speed?
Updates.
At what speed?
Well, the phone is 3G capable, but Metro is not.
Right.
Metro's only CDMA, but it's not.
What if they'll charge more when they get...
Well, you think they're going to go 3G? I don't think so.
Well, if they do, they have a wonderful charge bar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
But for now, it's fine for uploading images, browsing the web,
right,
and staying connected to various different IM clients.
Okay. The battery life is probably a lot better than iPhones.
Yeah. I go for 2.5 days being connected continuously off of one battery charge.
But that's not actually doing it. If you sat there playing with the internet,
right.
You'd probably find it's a lot worse. No.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's off and on use.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That works pretty well.
I just used up every item I have. By the way. I think.
This is one of those too little too late ploys. I think MySpace is kind of on a downhill trend right now compared to Facebook and Twitter and some of the other tools, the social media tools. It's kind of considered to be like the rogue social media tool, in my view.
But it's still used by younger people more?
Yeah.
It not used to be the positioning of it, kind of.
Yeah.
Like young people and bands were the ones who seemed to use it.
Although it's not so easy to post music up there as well. Like even bands, you have to create a profile for your band. And then by doing that, you then allow a different set of things to occur on that site.
It's as
oh, great. Good. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then people can come along and play your music or host your music from your band profile on their MySpace profile.
Oh, okay.
And that's generally how it works.
But the toolbar is really supposed to be useful or something.
Yeah, it's too little too late. I mean, I don't want to be logged into my MySpace all the time. I suppose there are people who will.
Right.
I don't think that's something that's going to win out anybody.
Yeah. isn't MySpace owned by Rupert Murdoch or something, I think.
Right. Yeah. StumbleUpon was one of those sites that was sort of geared towards being a toolbar.
Mm-hmm.
That was initially how you used it. You didn't have the website. You could go to the website, yeah. but
I still have that toolbar, but I always forget to press the buttons. I haven't used it for a long time, but I still have it.
Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be a very popular tool in my mind. I was thinking that was going to be something that would catch on, but it never really did. So,
yeah.
StumbleUpon is also kind of dying out.
Okay.
Of course, Mark, you have a MySpace just so you can look at other people's MySpace pages.
I haven't even done that for 6 months, probably, or something.
Right.
But yeah.
Hmm.
I subscribed to Tom's blog, so I knew about this toolbar thing. But he always sends out a blog entry maybe every 3 months or something. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to Tom. I also don't pay attention to Craig Newmark, but that's a different story.
I read every Twitter he does.
Do you actually read every Twitter, or do you look for the words bird, and if you see bird, you just simply ignore it?
Yeah. I look at everyone enough to see whether it's about birds or not. He really doesn't talk about much else anyway, frankly, but...
Hmm.
Every once in a while I'll mention something about Craigslist, but not that often.
Okay. Maybe he's just bored.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody who reaches that level, attains that level of popularity or money.
No, but he works.
He
talks about how he actually
and bugs and birds.
Does tech support and everything.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Does he answer the phone?
He personally answers email and personally, goes through and looks for spammers and removes messages and things like that, yeah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Another Computer History Daily quote.
Okay.
You're going to have to reach back. You're going to have to retch back into the past here.
Okay.
Mark, the TJ2 formatting program is developed in the early 1960s on a digital PDP-1 computer.
Okay.
TJ stands for Type Justifier. TJ2 is believed to be the first computerized word processor.
Hmm.
Long before the widespread use of interactive computer monitors, TJ2 users enter, edit, and save word text and formatting commands at a console typewriter.
Okay.
Does that ring any bells?
I was never into PDP stuff that much, no.
Al was.
On PDPs, I forget, he had jobs in schools where they would make him the computer person. He was supposed to be a teacher, but they make him the computer person because he's the only one who knew anything about it.
Okay.
But I forget if there were PDP machines or not. But again, this isn't the first one. His flex writers were first, but this would be a lot more convenient, I'm sure. But, and did it have lowercase? A lot of those things were uppercase only.
Yeah.
You know,
that I don't know.
Especially computer consoles, what would you want lowercase on a computer console for?
All right, so next one.
Mm-hmm.
This is one we can all relate to, including the people who are listening to this current show. The PHP language is created by Danish-Canadian programmer Rasmus Lerdorf in 1995. Lerdorf creates his personal set of Perl scripts he calls personal homepage tools.
Oh, okay.
He upgrades the scripts to communicate with databases and enables users to develop simple dynamic web applications.
Okay.
By 1997, PHP has a base of several thousand users with approximately 50,000 domains reporting as having it installed.
And did he install it at the server end? I mean, that was part of his invention, is because PHP is normally handled partly on the server, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
initially, I think...
So he do that, or he strictly did so?
Yeah, eventually got to that point, but I think initially it was all Perl, which was already installed. But you simply did stuff in Perl using a framework, per se, or something that he had created, which he was calling personal homepage, to embed those tags within your HTML that would then be interpreted on the server side. But I think it was all using Perl initially.
Because it wasn't Microsoft, so I never really got into the Microsoft equivalent of it either.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have been more inclined to learn the Microsoft method rather than
ASP.
Yeah.
I actually know a few developers who were Java proficient that started out doing ASP. Just that went from ASP to Java stuff.
So. Okay. What do you think? Speaking of that, I saw something today about using What's the free SQL thing that everyone uses?
My SQL?
SQL, yeah. I saw something. What, I can't forget what it was, though. Oh, you know how websites will sometimes know where you are?
Mm-hmm.
They'll be a little bit wrong, but you've never gone to that website before, so they have no cookies for you or anything. And yet they'll suddenly pop up.
Yeah.
The weather for San Francisco is...
Right. This is true of pornographic sites as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know this.
And the way they do that, they just have a database where they look up your IP address, and that kind of gets them down to where your ISP's servers are,
mm-hmm.
and they guess that you're probably in that neighborhood somewhere. That's really all they know.
You mean they don't have my home address?
Not likely. Oh, okay. You've never been there before, no cookies, anything. No, not likely.
I thought they were going to send girls in my area to my house.
Would you have to give them your address?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. I thought they were on their way over now.
Oh. No. Did it say that?
Darn. Click here. Beautiful women are on their way over to your house now.
Even before you click there? anyway, normally, apparently those databases are pretty expensive. You have to get pretty expensive subscription fees to keep them up to date and stuff. But there's some open project now where people will contribute ISP location information to a database, to a MySQL database that you can download and keep up to date for free.
Oh, wow.
To get that location information on your server if you want to. Anyway.
And it doesn't cost you anything? You just have to have a MySQL database?
Yeah, it's just because it's just a volunteer project to keep the addresses up to date. Yes.
So let's move on to the last daily history quote. Scottish inventor Alexander Bain invents the facsimile process in 1843.
Okay.
He devises an apparatus comprised of two pens connected to two pendulums, which in turn are joined to a wire that is able to reproduce writing on an electrically conductive surface.
Mm-hmm.
He receives a British patent for improvements in producing and regulating electrical currents and improvements in timepieces and in electric printing and signal telegraphs.
Okay. I remember when I was a child.
Okay.
I think it was the Scientific American or something. There was an article about how to build your own facsimile machine just with home parts you can get easily and stuff like that.
Okay.
And it had to do with a drum, and you would wrap your original paper around a drum, and then it had, I think the drum was like an oatmeal box or something. It's an oatmeal cylinder or something like that. I forget. And then it had the circuitry for how to read the, maybe a photocell or something, that the drum would spin around and you'd have a little thing with a photocell that would scan across it and send something across to the other end. The other end would have like an ink pen that would come down. Whenever the scanner saw something, the other end would lower an ink pen to the paper and then raise it up again and stuff. I forget if I actually built it or not, but I remember being interested in that.
This is on like...
Well, it's probably similar to this that guys have mentioned, but...
Yeah. That sounds really weird.
Yeah.
Like when I hear about like the sampling theorem and all the different things that have to do with digital audio being invented like before there was equipment that could actually like do any of this stuff.
Yeah, is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like the Nyquist theorem and and dithering, which was invented during some civil war.
Okay.
Yeah. Just crazy.
Well, the whole philosophy of dithering is used for more than just sound.
Okay, we've reached the point in the show where we get to actually talk a little bit about our favorite subject.
Right.
Which is?
iPhone fart apps?
Yes.
Well, I already talked about a couple of fart apps, so I'll leave those out, try to get some more.
Well, then let me start. I'm going to talk a little bit about a game that I've been playing that's actually a lot of fun.
Okay.
And I talked about it in a recent show, but I know for a fact that, that we don't have that show right now. So I'm gonna bring this up because I think it's worthwhile mentioning. It is. It's a game called Alpine Racer.
Okay.
And for any of the audience out there listening, this is sort of basically the Nintendo 64 skiing games where it's three-dimensional and you're looking down the hill, down the slope, and you can do tricks and stunts and jumps and things like that. This is a game
that's very much like that. Can you crash and break your neck?
You can fall, I think, and get, you know, and wipe out and stuff like that, but it's just the whole experience on an iPhone or an iTouch that's pretty fun.
Okay.
And you use your fingers to actually steer the person, do some jumps, and it's fun. And a lot of different slopes to play and skills, and you have to have some skill to learn. Anyway, so I really recommend that. I'll put a link in the show notes to that game.
Okay, so there was an update to one of the very first iPhone apps I ever installed.
All right.
It's called Chronometer. I got bored with it fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. It was actually a paid app, but I got bored with it fairly quickly. But they just came up with an update that I liked, and I decided just to keep it in for a while.
Okay.
What it does is it has a series of about 10, like, wristwatches.
Okay.
But very fancy ones, extremely fancy ones that just do a lot of things.
Okay.
That you would love to have a real wristwatch that did all those things sitting on your wrist.
All right.
But it simulates things that could conceivably be done strictly with mechanical movements and stuff.
All right.
But it does phases of the moon. Well, it has GPS. Yeah, that's not possible. One of them is like an analog face GPS where you have some of the different dials that point at the pointer. That's not really possible for a real watch. But most of them can do things that a real watch could do, like sun position and phases of the moon and stuff like that.
But just
very pretty, very fancy. Like, I'll just show you one like
oh,
that.
Wow. That's cool. Looks like a Rolex.
And then each one has a back, a front and a back with different functions.
Nice.
And they have, some of them have like a night mode where it shows how it lights up at night.
That is very cool.
And they just did an update that has a really nice stopwatch, is why I'm keeping it in for a while again. But it has a really nice analog looking stopwatch where you start the stopwatch and stop it and stuff like that. And then reset it and stuff. But like apparently this exists in the real world.
Thank you.
You know how any electronic stopwatch will have the lap timer where you keep a master timer going but you freeze in one lap at a time or something?
Okay.
Well, this one can do that totally mechanically, except it's electronic on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
But I start it, and then let's say I want to do a lap there. I hit that.
Okay.
Can you see that blue hand remains behind?
Yeah.
You don't realize it, but there's actually two hands moving simultaneously where the blue hand is hidden behind the orange one.
Okay.
And then so you do a lap timer just by stopping the blue one and letting the orange one continue the total time.
Okay.
And then at any point you can have the blue one catch up with
it.
So anyway, the instructions for this claim that there are real watches that do this, and he has a fancy name for the kind of watches that can do this thing. So it's just really cool because it does a very good simulation of mechanical clocks and stuff.
You can use the lap timer to time your lap dances.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
Sure.
But it doesn't multitask, so you have to have it open and running at this.
No. Well, you can go away from it and come back.
Right.
And it'll know how much time
has progressed. Okay.
So it will keep itself up.
Okay.
But it has alarms, but so not this one, but it has other ones that have alarms.
Okay.
And the alarms will only happen if the application is running.
Cool.
Obviously.
Cool. All right, so.
But it has all these different ones.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very pretty analog watches.
It's like a GPS one, isn't it?
Really cool. This is a GPS one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
See this one? Where's the, that's the phase of the
hand moving is very, very smooth.
Yeah. And they all do different things.
That's awesome. There's like a lot of them too.
Yeah. Is this the...
can you design your own or do some sort of like...
No,
that's
no.
cool. I like that.
But this one... See, this one's an alarm. You can turn on and off...
So, could you get like a strap?
See, you can turn on and off the alarm, but in the way that a mechanical watch could have done it.
Okay.
See, and everything.
So, if you strap a band around the actual iPhone,
you could
wear it on your wrist.
Yeah, you could.
And have one of those things running.
Right.
That's creative.
And this one, it makes an alarm just like a mechanical watch where it just goes, bing. Bing, 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 you know, just like a mechanical watch.
Nice.
Anyway, so I just like this application a lot again, but I used to use it.
That is very cool. That is good. Oh, and those are the different watch faces?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So mine has an update. I actually want to follow suit, following in your footsteps here. Pocket Money is a Quicken-like application for the iPhone and iTouch. But they recently added one of the features that I've been waiting for a while. And I think he had it in his Windows Mobile version.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, actually it was not Windows Mobile. He had Pocket Money in the Newton version.
Oh, okay.
That's where it was originally came from, was Newton.
Okay.
To allow budgeting. So you can set budgets, and it's a completely different addition to the application that lets you go in and set all kinds of budgets for how much money you want to spend, either weekly, daily, or monthly.
Right.
You can set these budgets, and as you add transactions and withdraw money, you can specify this goes to this particular budget. I'm spending money towards this particular budget. Track individual budgets if you wish.
But does it keep a track of your bank account so it knows if you're trying to run?
Yeah, it supports Intuit's format. It supports CSV, comma, delimited files.
Can you get it online, or you have to spend extra time downloading these files? Can you get it on the internet to your bank directly and all these things?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think it will go directly to your bank or do anything like that, but you can upload and download these files into the Touch or your phone for it to use.
Okay.
I want to say it works. No, it doesn't work with Google, but there is something where it will actually, like, get the information off of a server.
Okay.
But anyway, most formats are recognized, and it will do exporting as well as importing.
And can you enter transactions in the field? Like, if you write a check, can you stop right there and enter the check you just wrote into it? And
yes.
Have that synchronized later to quicken on your
PC or whatever? And you can set up things like bank charges for non-standard ATM usage.
Okay.
So that every time you go and you withdraw money from an ATM, it automatically applies that bank charge.
Okay.
Stuff that's, you know, little minor things that actually end up being very much a help.
You know what they should have? They should have something that uses a camera that, when you go to an ATM, hold the phone in your right hand with the camera aiming at the ATM, and then use your left hand to do the transaction, and it'll watch what you did and just automatically enter the thing.
There is some good OCR ATM machines around. My bank actually does
yeah, mine does that.
That
too, yeah. Mine does
that, yeah. You just, like, literally slip a check in, and it figures out how much the total is, and it says, am I correct? It shows you a picture.
Yeah, mine does that. But I talked to someone who's in, you think that's a great feature, but I talked to someone who's in business and gets maybe 50 or 100 checks at a time.
Okay.
And his ATMs were converted to that. He has to sit there with every one of those 50 or 100 checks doing that. So he was very annoyed with that feature.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. So that's
his
it for me.
His name is something Mike.
Oh, really?
I do. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
That's right. I know this person.
So did I ever talk about Mint? Maybe I'll...
Briefly. And there's been more people talking about Mint.
Mint is kind of like... It does... Vaguely, like what you're saying, so it's really the opposite. It just interfaces with your bank and just gives you your balance and the last transactions and stuff directly from your bank as an iPhone application. It's a website, actually. So, I mean, you can set up the website, just use it from there, where you can have multiple accounts and credit cards and things like that, and just go to the one website of mint.com, I think, to look up what's going on with all those things. But then they have this PC, this iPhone app that'll let you see that same data out in the field.
Okay.
You
know, so what is their value? What are they doing?
They're just
allowing you to access
multiple
your bank.
Account, multiple banks, multiple accounts.
Okay.
At the all-in-one application, basically, and it'll send out alerts. But it seems to be a little bit weird about it. But you can specify on the website. You can specify, like, if your balances are getting low, it should send you an email or a text.
Okay.
Or if you make a large deposit clears, it'll alert you that you don't have to spend all that money you just deposited.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Yeah. All right. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. So we're near the end of our show.
Yeah, I'm done, really. But I don't have anything else exciting.
I'm updating something right now. I'm updating...
I have another watch program. There's a million iPhone applications that emulate very fancy looking watches.
Huh.
But I like that one. That one's kind of pretty.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, this is the Bell & Ross. Yeah, there's a brand of watches called Bell & Ross, and they have a free iPhone app that just emulates one of their watches.
Okay.
This is actually a wristwatch, believe it or not, you know.
Hmm. But anyway. It looks pretty sturdy.
Yeah. But there's actually a little strap there and stuff. So
cool.
Yeah. It probably only costs $5,000 to buy the real watch.
Probably does, even though it's simple looking. Well, once again, I just want to say thank you to everybody for listening to the show. Remember, it's www.slurpcast.com.
Right.
You want to go there and actually look at the links that we have. In fact, most people go there first before they listen to the show.
They do.
Well, the people that I have talked to who do listen to the show actually generally get a kick out of the links first, and then they listen to the show just to hear about what we have to say regarding the links.
Okay, that's funny.
And what else? And then participate in the blogs, because each show has a blog where you can add comments.
Right.
Let us correct us and let us know if
we're wrong. Someone actually did the other day. Someone actually did.
Really?
Remember a couple weeks ago someone left one?
A while ago. I know I got corrected. I got corrected. I was corrected about regarding what is it, Silver Bowl? Remember I kept saying Silver Bowl when it was Silver Ball?
Oh, okay, yeah, the pinball place, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, all right. Do you want to review the restaurant?
Yeah.
Bring it to you, anything else today?
No, that's
no,
it.
That's all.
Ready for the check. Thanks.
No, okay, thank you. Yeah, the pizza, it's not your typical garbage pizza, but it was good.
No.
It had a lot of meats and a lot of different things on it.
Our bill was $41.68 for basically two pizzas.
And a salad.
And Arnold Palmer's.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay.
And you got charged twice, by the way.
Because he gave me two.
For the Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, because he brought two of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks for listening. And we'll get the next show out as soon as we can.
Okay.